What makes a superhero? Is it physical prowess or a magic ring? Do you need a cape? What if everyone could be a superhero? What if everyone had the ability to help the people around them? Dr. Madeline Sherrick thinks that we all can choose to be superheroes, and she's looking to breed a whole generation of them with her children's book, The Superheroes Club. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and that's what we're talking about on Through the Eyes of Women, right here and now on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. There's not a lot of power in childhood. We see some troubling situations or in no position to help. Fortunately, no one expects that much of us either. But where do we find our personal power? Who will we make our heroes? I'm talking with Dr. Madeline Sherrick about her work teaching kids to become their own kind of superhero. Hello, Dr. Sherrick. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
It's nice speaking with you.
Dr. Sherrick, why do we need heroes?
I think that we need heroes because we're living, as always, we live in a challenging world. We need to have the people that we can look up to and be inspired by, people who can help empower us to live our fullest lives and to help each other journey through life.
What is it that fascinates us about superheroes in particular?
Well, I think we look beyond ourselves and we all dream, especially young children. We dream of a future and the kinds of things that could excite us and discovering new worlds and discovering new experiences. And I think from what we've seen in the media, superheroes kind of take us into that fantasy world.
How is the fantasy trickling into our real world? How is our little everyday brain seizing onto these fantastical people and worlds?
I think we come to realize that we've got to really look within ourselves, that it's not just those superhero powers that are going to help us navigate our lives and figure out how we will build a future for ourselves and live in the world that we live in, and that we've got to figure out, what is it within ourselves that can empower us to live our best lives and have meaning in our lives?
And you've spent a lot of time working with kids. You've got how many grandchildren?
I have 10 grandchildren.
And you've been in the education system for a long time as a math teacher?
I have. I actually started my graduate work when my children were very young. Had my first daughter when I was a senior in college, and my second daughter was born when I started my master's, and my son was born when I started my doctorate. So I was going to school having kids and learning about what it was like to raise children and how they fit into the world, and they were almost my guinea pigs. Whatever I was learning in school, I was trying on my own children. And education has always been near and dear to my heart because I've always seen it as that which makes us whole. We figure out the world through education. And then I taught at the university level and taught all different grade levels as a substitute teacher, but my love was teaching math. And I did that for a number of years. And when I left that, I taught again at the university level. And now I'm supervising student teachers at Pepperdine University.
And these children in your life, your students, your kids, your grandkids, who did you first notice your own kids looking up to as role models and heroes?
I don't know if I saw them looking up to others as role models or superheroes, but I did notice that they were behaving in that way. And I try to figure out, okay, what made them do that? And then I did realize, I think what they did was they started to imitate how my husband and I have lived our lives and how my kids, their parents, have lived their lives.
What did they choose to pick up on and imitate?
Well, they chose to pick up on things that they could do to help other people. My kids go to schools where, fortunately, one of the values that is encouraged and embraced is doing community events, doing charitable work, and doing fundraising events. And so it was something that they've grown up with. One of my grandsons, on weekends, he photographs teams of kids who are special needs and helps them, coaches them in baseball. Another one of my grandsons, he builds computers for schools that can't afford to have computers. One of my granddaughters, works in a soup kitchen. So they figure out different ways because it's something that they've grown up with and have seen through, as I said, my husband and I, my kids, and even my own dad. Till he was 90, he was doing volunteer work.
Do you think this is common in a lot of families?
I think it is becoming more and more something that families and parents are embracing. And that's encouraging to me.
What other messages are you seeing the kids in your life get? You're saying that the kids around you have gotten, it sounds like a pretty strong message of social service. What else are you seeing our world attempt to tell them?
I think what adults, and I see it in schools and the programs that they're trying to integrate into their academic work, are values-based programs. And I think they're realizing that it's important to instill specific values in children, empathy, and just the values that we all, honesty, integrity, perseverance, courage, empowerment, just the kinds of things that will enable them to grow up and work in a world where they've got to deal with kids who have special needs, a diverse demographic, socioeconomic differences, and we all have to live and work together and figure out how we can do that in a harmonious way.
Dr. Sherrick, you're giving me tons of hope for the upcoming generation. Do you think common throughout most public schools, are we doing this good a job for our kids? I'm getting kind of excited.
Well, I can't speak for whether that's the norm or whether it's isolated. I'm encouraged because I'm in the classroom now when I observe my student teachers. And first of all, I have to give a shout out to this new generation of young people who are going into teaching. They are committed. They understand the landscape of the situations they're going to be going into, and they're excited. And they're doing everything they can to see the bigger picture, not only of the academics, but also how to embrace those values and make that part of who they are and what they want their classrooms to be. So I'm encouraged in that respect. And when I do go into the classrooms and I see how the teachers who are there now and the kinds of programs and the relationships they have with young people, I do see that kind of thing. I see the building of mutual respect. I see enforcing the attitudes of kids learning to work together and be empathetic with each other and helping each other, and even doing projects that will encourage them to go out into the community and do good things, acts of kindness and charity and all the things that we hope will be embraced as we move forward. I also want to give a shout out to the University of Maryland. Now, that's my alma mater. I got my master's and my doctorate there. Don't know what the year was, but it's been a few years where they now have a major that young people can study, which teaches them how to work in nonprofit organizations and even start their own organizations. That,
at what grade are we talking?
Well, this is on the university level.
Oh, great.
They have a new major. And, you know, as soon as I hear things like that, the wheels start turning in my head. And I'm thinking, okay, if we've got university students who are studying that on the university level, maybe we can tie them into as part of an internship. They can then work in the schools, in the public schools, in the early grades, and start working with young people to develop those attitudes in them as well.
Sounds like you're getting very near to answering my next question, which was, what inspired you to create the Superheroes Club?
That actually came out of an experience that my daughter recounted with one of my granddaughters. When she was in preschool, she was in a class where half the class were typically developing students and the other half were special needs. She befriended a little girl who didn't speak. And it didn't matter to Lily. Lily actually is one of the main characters in the book, and she's the only one that's really true to form. And she spoke enough for the two of them, and no matter what Lily did, her little friend came along, and they found out how they could communicate without words. And I just said to myself, you know what? Kids, maybe they see differences, but it doesn't bother them. They just know how to communicate. They know how to have a good time together, and they're very embracing of others. It just seems to be something inherent in young children.
And so how long has Superheroes Club been out and available now?
It came out in October. I've been very encouraged because kids who read it and parents who embrace it and grandparents, they see it as a template almost that they can use to have valuable discussions with their children and grandchildren, as well as teachers and counselors.
What kind of conversations are they having with their teachers and counselors?
They're doing two things. First, they're talking about the values that we talked about, how it's important to have empathy, how it's important to see the specialness in our differences, see how our lives become enriched because of our diversity, that it's important for us to all feel accepted in everything we do and who we are. And in particular, I selected four different characters who represented to me what I see in terms of characteristics of young people. Lily, for example. Lily wakes up every morning with a smile on her face, and she jumps out of bed and is this happy young child. And the discussion that parents may have regarding Lily is, well, do you wake up that way every morning? How many kids wake up happy every morning? And if they don't, how can adults help that child? When I think of Alex, Alex has autism spectrum disorder.
And Alex is Lily's neighbor down the street?
Yes. Alex is a friend that she's grown up with. And Alex, as I said, has autism spectrum disorder. But what does Alex really want? Alex just wants to belong. He wants to have friends, and he wants to be part of a school community. Well, whether you have autism spectrum disorder or not, isn't that what all kids want? They want to belong. They want to find a place. They want to feel comfortable at school. They want to be part of the group. And that's a valuable thing that parents are always talking about their kids. As far as Mia, she's the gymnast. How many times did she fall off that beam before she was able to really succeed? And that character represents what we want for our kids. We want them to persevere. We want them to get up when they fall down. And all we really want, even if you can't do that split leap, as long as you've tried, you've been successful. And finally, the Joaquin character is that little boy who, for him, the world is great. He is a happy little boy, but he doesn't realize that maybe the kids around him aren't as happy as he is. And Lily reminds him, you know what? Just because the world is good for us, we also have to think beyond ourselves and see if there's something that we can do. Can we find that heroic potential within each of us to help someone other than ourselves?
You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and we're talking with Dr. Madeline Sherrick about her book, Superheroes Club. Dr. Sherrick, what kind of kid were you?
Oh, I was someone who went to school and studied and went to school and studied and went to school and studied.
And that's how you became a doctor, right?
Yes. You know, it was instilled in me that school was really important. Education was very important. But here's the thing. It sounds tedious, but I loved school. School was my community. So although I went to school and studied, but when I was at school, it wasn't just studying. You know, I was on a student council, and I was on the yearbook, and I was in the art club. School was a place where I was able to do all those other things. At the time that I went to school, fortunately, we had all of those things. We had more than just the academic subjects. We had those creative arts. So I just loved going to school and embraced the things that interested me.
So that wasn't a hint that maybe it wasn't entirely the most balanced childhood when you said went to school and studied, went to school and studied?
Right. There were opportunities that I obviously would have liked. My parents financially were not in a position I would have loved to have taken art lessons outside of school or taken ballet lessons or did a lot of those kinds of things. But unfortunately, it wasn't part of my childhood. I don't feel cheated, although you do say I wish I could have. But I just made the best of the situation and embraced the things that I could embrace.
And who were your heroes?
I think probably my parents.
What did they teach you about what's important?
I think they taught me perseverance, hard work, commitment, honesty, integrity, value who you are and what you do, no matter what job you have, whether you're making a lot of money or a little bit of money. It's really about your own personal feelings about doing the job and doing the best job you could do, whatever it is. And no matter what you're doing, small, big, or for whom, it's all about valuing what you're doing and trying your best.
What drew you then into the educational field, aside from your obvious love of your time at school as a kid, right?
I think part of it, when I was growing up, for women particularly, you either went into teaching or you went into nursing. So I loved academics, and it was actually my ninth grade. I took algebra in the ninth grade at that time, and after I took algebra, I said, when I grow up, I want to be an algebra teacher. From that time on, it was what motivated me. And then as far as continuing on, my undergraduate was in math education, but my graduate was in comparative education. And by the time I did graduate work, the reason I shifted was because I was having kids, and I said to myself, okay, what's important now for me? It wasn't so much the math as it was, all right, how am I going to raise these kids? Because I was very young when I had them. And it gave me the opportunity to study in school what I was living with my own children.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as I said, my oldest daughter was born when I was a senior in college.
Yeah.
So at that time, I was student teaching, and it's not that I was teaching her anything at the time, but it was really figuring out how to manage going to school, because going to school for me was like a job. How do I manage going to school and also having a young child? So it was an important balancing act for me for deciding, okay, quantity versus quality, and I just had to make sure that whatever time I was spending with my kids was quality time. And when was the right time to leave children with a babysitter? And what part of the day and what ages was it most important to be with them? And what kinds of lessons did I feel important at that time at their development to instill upon them? So that continued even once they graduated school. I always said, okay, someone else feed my child, but when it came to homework, I should be there. Or when it was time to listen at the kitchen table to help them with their homework, but to also be a part of their conversations and figure out, okay, what's going on at school, by just being in the kitchen and listening to their conversations and how I could help them at that time. So it was an ongoing, I don't want to say it was a struggle, but it was an ongoing challenge throughout the years of when to be present and what I could do to make sure that they were living the best lives that they could be, and that I was being the parent that I wanted to be.
Okay, and then for all of the working parents out there listening to this and trying to claim their life balance, carve out that quality time with their kids, Dr. Sherrick, can you just tell us one or two times when it'll be okay to drop the ball as a parent? And what are the things we can let go and not worry about?
Well, I think that's specific to each family and each situation. The one thing I always did was I always shared with my kids what I was going through, meaning, you know what, I need to do this right now, and I need you to be patient and give me a half hour, and then I promise you we will be able to do what you need, or vice versa. I'd always make sure that they were honest with me. Tell me if you need me. And I made sure that I listened to the words that they were saying. Whatever they were saying, it was really important, and I needed to stop what I was doing at that moment. It's all about communication and listening. It was very interesting. Once you're advanced to candidacy, when you're on the doctoral track, you have a certain amount of time to complete your dissertation. And again, I had my kids, and my husband and I, because of his work, we traveled a lot. California was actually our eighth move. And I did my dissertation and my studying for my comps long distance. And finally, I got a notice saying I had a year left to finish my dissertation. And I finally said to my husband and my kids, you've got to give me a year, and I've got to finish writing this dissertation. And they were 10, 8, and 5 at the time. And I said, okay, for this next year, when you come into the house, the only thing you're allowed to say to me is, Mommy, what can I do for you? But they were good ages where they understood. They saw me studying. They saw me writing. And when I was doing that, they were sitting at the kitchen table, and they were studying, and they were doing their homework. And you know what? That's the kind of relationship we had. They knew this was really important. Now, obviously, if they were sick and they needed something urgent, I was there for them. But they knew that they had to be cooperative, and they were also at a good age where they could do that. And they knew if I needed them to be with a babysitter for a certain period of time, they were okay with that, too. So as I said, I don't think that I can say, okay, there should be so many hours a day for a parent to be with their children. It really is, you have to know yourself, you have to know your child, you have to be honest in terms of communicating with each other to find out when your child says, I really need you, you hear it, and you respond.
So flashing forward a little bit from there, how long did you spend developing the Superhero Club?
Well, it's so interesting. When I go speak to students, they say to me, how long did it take you to write it? I said, well, it took about 20 minutes to write the initial story, but that was over 3,000 words, because I was used to writing academic writing, not children's stories.
You wrote a 3,000-word children's book.
Well, no, in the first draft,
yes.
3,000 words. And so, obviously, I knew that I had to get it down to 1,000. So it took 20 minutes for the first, and then it took 2 years. But part of it is you write, you rewrite, you cut out, and you realize that the story you can tell is also in illustrations, not just in the text. But really, the stories have been developing over the past easily 20 years. My oldest grandson will be 20. So there are things I've learned from all of them, from my own children, even my grandchildren, from seeing them, from seeing their friends and their interactions. So those stories have been percolating in my head over 2 decades. And part of that is because I see the world through the lens of a child. So that whenever I see things on TV or I see a movie or I read something, I always say, okay, how will a child interpret this? How will an adolescent interpret this? So I always think what effect it has in a positive way or in a negative way. So I think finally, when I wrote this, it was just a compilation of so many things that I've seen over the years with my own grandchildren and their friends, so that all of the characters, except for Lily, Lily is Lily, the other three characters are combinations of some of my grandchildren and some of their friends. And there are also 2 other books in the works. They're already written. They haven't been completely illustrated. By the end of the third, all 10 grandchildren or representations of them are in all the books.
And are they pretty excited about that?
Oh, yes. Well, Lily is very proud. And the others say, okay, who am I? Who am I? So, as I said, it's a combination of all of them through so many years of observing them, loving them, caring for them, and just being part of their lives.
How are the kids responding when you're giving these public readings that we've seen on your website? How are they reacting to the superheroes?
It's interesting. They react in different ways depending on the ages. So I've read to 3-year-olds, and I've read to as old as probably 10-year-olds. The reaction is they'll react to different things. The very young children are captivated, and some of the older ones are too, are captivated by the illustrations. My illustrator is fabulous. I mean, she brought these characters to life.
How closely did you work with your illustrator?
Well, the interesting thing is she is, this is her first book. She was a recent graduate of CalArts in California, and we only met a few times. She and I met personally, perhaps I want to say 4 times, and most of what is done today is all done digitally. So we would talk on the phone, and she would send me samples. The only character that I really talked about with regard to what she would look like is the Lily character, because that's how Lily is. She's very eclectic in the way she dresses, and she marches to her own drummer. But the other characters she came up with, we did talk about ethnicity and, the fact that we did want Alex to have autism spectrum disorder. But the collaboration was a perfect collaboration. She was able to embrace the vision that I had for the characters, and she would send kind of sketches, 2 or 3 sample sketches of what the characters could look like, what they would be wearing, color hair, facial characteristics, and then together we would select. And that's really how we worked. And now she's almost finished with the second book, but she's now living in Australia. And that's being done completely by computer. So it's amazing in today's world how you can have this wonderful relationship with someone and be able to create a book. And it's done technologically.
Dr. Sherrick, I wanted to ask you, of course, what is next for the superheroes of the Superheroes Club?
Well, the second book is called Superheroes Club, A Celebration of Uniqueness. The intent in that book was to really focus in a school community. How do we bring young kids together to appreciate each other? And it actually is to identify what makes us each unique and then realize, my goodness, seeing all that diversity in all areas is what can enrich their lives and that could bring them together. So that's what the second book is about. And the third book is called Superheroes Club, A Sharing and Caring Community. The intent in that is to actually form the Superheroes Club at school so that there's an environment built in already where kids feel they're a part of something important and they can share and care about each other and share and care with regard to the world around them.
For our closing thought for our listeners, Dr. Sherrick, I wanted to ask you, what can grown-ups learn from superheroes?
I think not just grown-ups, but everyone, kids as well, and adolescents, is that each one of us has the heroic potential within ourselves to not only make ourselves and empower ourselves, but to help the world around them. You know, I do one thing after each of my readings, and that is I ask all the kids and the adults as well, I said, just turn around and smile to the person around you. And the younger kids especially, they start giggling. And I say to them, didn't that feel good to just smile at someone? I said, just by smiling at someone and kind of acknowledging that you're happy and that you get pleasure out of being near someone and around someone, you can make their day. And to me, we can all be superheroes.
Thank you, Dr. Sherrick. That is great to know. Let's all be superheroes. Let's all go out and make somebody's day. Thank you for being on Through the Eyes of Women.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad I had the opportunity to share what is so near and dear to me and what I'm so passionate about.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Bracon, and I've been speaking with Dr. Madeline Sherrick about her book, Superheroes Club. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, thanks to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime and through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.